So thanks a lot for the introduction, and thanks to organizers for the invitation to come here. So we are located in Basel, and Basel has a lot of common with New York. It also has a river, and it also has a sky. So it's very nice to be here. I would like to speak about miniaturization of sample preparation. You already heard quite some information about it. But if you look at the classical way to prepare negative stain, I assume everyone still knows what negative stain is, and cryo, you have three to four major steps to overcome. So first, you have to dispense your sample on the grid. You have to do sometimes sample conditioning, as you are doing with negative stain. You do a sample thinning. Mostly, until today, it's done with filter paper blotting. And then you have a post-processing, like drying for negative stain, or you plunge the grid in liquid ethane. So this is done like this. We wanted to miniaturize this. And of course, there was a motivation. I will come at the very end of my talk to that, to the single visual proteomics. But other driving forces to do that is that we have a minimal sample consumption. We don't want to lose 99.999% of our sample. So we want what we put on the grid, we would like to keep there. And other benefits could be that we avoid harsh paper plotting conditions and have a better control of the EM grid preparation. Also, I will stress out microfluidic methods also allow new ways to do sample conditioning. So if you want to introduce something or take something out of your sample, you can do this rapidly with these technologies. Some words in microfluidics, I don't want to go to the details. So microfluidics is scaling down the volumes and control geometrically constrained volumes. So if you do that to a certain amount below 300 micrometers, the physics and the behavior of liquids change dramatically. And well, there are a series of dimensionless numbers, like the Reynolds numbers gets very low. So it's a viscous-dominated regime then. Or the Packlet numbers also get very low. So the ratio between convection to diffusion for mixing, as example, is completely diffusion controlled. Also, capillary numbers does not change so much. One point, which is very important, and we heard this several times today, we have a very high surface to volume ratio. So surface effects, surface tension, and surface stress are very important in these small volumes. So I mentioned the Packlet number. And one example which can be enabled by this technology is sample conditioning. So we started some years ago with micro dialysis fibers. So we never came below 20 nanoliters or 30 nanoliters of preparation, and it made a long way. So this was not a way to go. And then it came to us to mind, okay, the Packlet numbers are really very low. We can do it much simpler for sample conditioning, as an example. We can load the sample in a microcapillary tip, around 5 nanoliters. And then here, it's geometrically restrained. So very low Packlet numbers, diffusion controlled. So small molecules like ions diffuse easily out or in. But proteins, they are very large. They have significant lower diffusion constants. So they stay in the tip. So in this way, the proteins stay in the tip. So we can exchange buffer from very small volumes. But this does not apply for if we put it in an epitope tube, as example. This is much larger. There we have significant contributions of convection. So it's rapidly exchanged. So this is a way how microfluidics technology can help you to condition samples or to prepare your sample. The second step we have to overcome, and we already heard from Spottiton, of course, we have to dispense the sample on it. And if we look in the literature, what was done during the last years is already quite a lot. So inkjet spotting is used more and more, obviously. We are using mainly microcapillary writing on the grid. Quite an old technique already is spraying over it. You can use, and it's increasingly used again. And also a very interesting idea is contact printing. After you, for cryo-EM and also for negative stain, when you applied your sample to the EM grid, you have to do something like thinning. So classically, it's done by filter paper plotting. I have here some just arbitrary notes, what came to my mind also this morning in the discussions. You need thinning of the water film due to the surface stress. You cannot have very, very small contact angles. Thin films below 100 nanometers are inherently unstable, so they tend to de-wet in a certain time. This destabilization is mainly due for polar aqueous liquids by polar hydrophobic attractions of the surfaces, so it's an entropy-driven process from our understanding. I'm not expert here. And interesting point is actually slight water evaporation stabilizes thin films to in the second range, towards the second range. This is quite interesting. And just, I think many of you experience this when you prepare grids. It's very difficult to do from plain water. Dirt helps, especially surface active substances help for grid preparation. So for the sample thinning, this morning we heard about the, in my view, genius idea of self-plotting grids. That's very nice. Besides filter paper, if I look in the literature, there is re-aspiration was used. We also use controlled evaporation to additional thinning. I will come back to this. What we also tried is electrowetting. We really failed with that, so I don't. It makes more problems than it helps. And a very nice idea was also this morning discussed by Bob Glaser, is to use the Marangoni effect. So we made some tests with that, and it seems really to help. The effect itself is not strong enough to make thin films, but it, I think in most cases, we anyway have a combination of these thinning methods, like, let's say, re-aspiration, slight evaporation, or paper plot, filter paper plotting, and some evaporation of liquids, which makes at the end of the thin film. And I think if we can use additionally that to it, it could provide a much better way for us for the future. In the second half, I would like to summarize what we developed the last 7 years, approximately. I will start with the miniaturization of the cryo-EM grid preparation and negative stain EM grid preparation, and then we'll discuss two opportunities this opens for us to further proceed with this project. One is inline protein isolation, so we can connect now directly protein isolation to the grid preparation, also not sequentially connect them. And at the end, I will speak about single cell lysis and visual proteomics. So for to do this end, to do accomplish all these tasks, we developed a series of modular microfluidics elements. So it goes from live cell imaging to cryo plunging. So these are all different modules. And these modules we integrated all with the help of microcapillaries. This has several advantages for us. We first started with complex chips. What we realized is that if we purify a protein, we have minimal amounts of protein, and we have large surface, we lose the protein too much. So if we keep everything just in the first few millimeters of our capillary and do all our processing in there, we don't lose so much protein by unspecific binding to the surfaces of our containment. There is also one other advantage, it minimizes tailor dispersion. So if we pump small liquids through pipes, we get a dilution, a hindrance dilution of our solutes. So this we also minimize with it. So as you can see, most modules we integrated directly here. Of course, we have the cryo plunging, this is in mechanics, and live cell imaging, this is not that much miniaturized at the moment. So now we can combine these different modules, and I will come back to this later. What we can do as example, we can combine the module for sample conditioning to introduce negative stain ions and remove endogenous ions, which otherwise provide give salt crystals from the sample, and we can write this on a grid. So we can do negative stain EM. We can recombine it also that we can do protein fishing, writing on the grid, and then do cryoplunging. Or we can do live cell imaging. We can lyse individual cells, do a conditioning in it, and do negative stain EM subsequently from it. So this is a very modular system where we can recombine on the needs what we want to do for biological experiments. This is all integrated in this home-built, historically grown setup. So I just point out some important aspects. So the heart of the setup is a high-precision pump. We modified it as a commercial pump. We modified slightly. Here you see the capillary. As an example, we can grow cells on ITO-coated grids in these miniaturized Petri dishes. Here you see the nozzle. Or behind here, we have a stage to prepare EM grids. I will come back to all of these models. And very much hidden, you don't really see it. We have the other models for protein sample conditioning or protein fishing. So first of all, I would like to go to the miniaturized cryo-EM grid preparation. So we are not spotting. We are directly putting the sample. We put the sample directly on the grid. And the grid is placed on a dew point stage, as we call it. It's a precisely temperature-controlled stage. And we can control the temperature of the grid, right, because the grid is in very close contact, thermal contact to the stage. So what we are doing is we have different application protocols. I will come back to that. So basically, we place the sample on it. We have then a wait time. This wait time is something like 0.1 seconds to a few seconds. So if we keep it on the exactly on the dew point, no water evaporates. So we can keep it stable for half an hour if we want. Normally, we don't want that. Or we just place it, and we have an offset to the dew point temperature, which induces a slight, slow water evaporation in the environment. So this we can monitor with a sensor. We're not always using that because normally the process is very fast, where we use interferometric information to trigger our plunging, and then we retract the grid and plunge it in liquid ethane. So the time frames we are doing this is from 0.1 seconds to a few seconds long. So here you can see some movies. This is the cryo stage here with a pincet, the tweezer holding the grid. We have a pickup mechanism which then shoots it into, normally here is the liquid ethane. And here you can see this does not run. Or how we apply the, here you can see it closer. So we can apply the liquid, and we distribute the liquid on the grid. And then we have a wait time. We can control this either with the sensor, or we just give a given wait time, and the grid is plunged, as you have seen before here. So this is the plunging mechanism you're using. So it retracts, and then it's plunged into the liquid ethane. So we are using two protocols. If someone is coming with a sample he wants to prepare, let's say 5 microliters of sample he purified, we are using a total volume of approximately 15 nanoliters. So we aspirate 15 nanoliters of sample. We distribute a certain amount of the sample onto the grid. We retract most of the sample. We re-aspirate most of the sample. We wait a short time because we need some slight evaporation of liquid before we plunge the grid. We have a protocol 2. And the intention of this protocol was to have a total sample preparation. So we want to lyse individual cell and prepare an EM grid. And there we have few nanoliters of sample. We aspirate, we deponize write it. We prime the grid with this sample. And then we run a linear increase of the temperature of the stage from the dew point temperature. And we measure the thinning of the sample until a critical point of our sensor signal is reached. And this triggers the plunging mechanism. Why this works, I will come back to this at the very end of the talk. We do not really understand what's going on, but we can do cryo of a total of 3 nanoliters of sample like this. This is the typical picture of what we published beginning of this year. So here you see the deponized amorphous ice region. So the periphery is labeled by yellow arrows. Here you see the periphery. Here is the thin ice. This is the quality of the ice, and this is a typical picture what we get out with it. So this we can test systematically. What we are normally doing is, if someone comes with a sample, we pre-test the freezing conditions. What you can see here for a 0.1 second time gap, we have different offset temperatures by 1 degree, and you see we have a systematic change of the ice or vitreous ice thickness. Here it's ways too thick. It's getting okay. Here it seems to be okay, and here you have good ice, homogeneous ice then on this surface layer. So this is a time gap of around 0.1 seconds where there's slight water evaporation before we plunge the grid. What we are doing is we make the buffer, we put a dummy protein like apo ferritin into it, and we start screening for the good conditions to prepare a grid. So of course there are also problems with it. As already was discussed this morning, water evaporation is not always nice. I think also with classical grid preparation, you have a slight water evaporation. It stabilizes the film in the second range. And if we overdo with this thinning step, so we can do this, we get this very, very grainy background. So, and this suddenly appears. It does not start, let's say you don't have less contrast at the beginning, it suddenly comes. We think it's nucleation of salt, what we see. So the salt is too much up concentrated in the water film. Yeah?
That should be easy to test. Do you freeze different ion concentrations and look?
Exactly. So we are now testing this systematically. What we also realized is, especially when you have detergent or additives, it changes rapidly, this point. So everything you have in has an effect. Yeah. So of course, we can also combine the cryo plunging and writing with sample conditioning. So we take the sample up, we do a conditioning as I have shown in before. So we dip the microcapillary in a reservoir, and then write the grid. And we try different additives actually at the moment. So the idea is that we can block the air-water interface with additives. We tried different detergents, and we try to analyze this statistically if it has an effect on the orientation of the protein. But this is an ongoing project at the moment. We also improved the cryo-writing setup since last summer. We are still working on an improved thickness sensor. We are not so keen about it anymore because mostly we just have a constant time gap and different offset temperatures. But in principle, it should be possible to measure thickness by using 2 lasers. Wavelengths to understand this pattern better. What we implemented in the meantime is that we have a stream of conditioned air at the grid position so that we can control the humidity and the dew point temperature. At the moment, we are dependent on the room temperature and the room humidity, relative humidity in the air. This would allow us to prepare a grid at different temperatures, as example, 4 degrees, or also someone wanted to prepare grids at 25 degrees. It allows to exclude oxygen, what we realized with some sample that is that oxygen disturbs proteins when they are exposed to, and it allows us to inject modulators to use Bob Glaser's ID for the Aragoni effect for thinning of the sample. So this was prior EM, but we also want to do negative stain EM. For this, we use the conditioning module. So we take up around 5 nanoliters of sample. We put the microcapillary in a reservoir with negative stain heavy metal ions like ammonium acetate. We wait for 3 to 7 minutes. This depends on the sample. And this time, we have a diffusive exchange of small molecules. Of course, we also lose a little bit of protein, but it's normally not more than 5 to 10%. Of the total protein contents. It depends on the size of the protein. And endogenous salt ions go out, and heavy metal salt ions go in. And then we just depose, write it on a grid. So we get some grid squares filled with this negative stain protein. Here are the results. Now I have to see. So on the left side, this is, of course, it's with PBS buffer. PBS can precipitate with heavy metal salt, so we have to do the conditioning a little bit longer than with other salts like TRISPAF. Here we are around 7 minutes. Here we are around 3 minutes for conditioning, and we tested this different heavy metal stains, so from nanovan, so commercial ones, or ammonium molybdate. We're doing our own to prepare EM grids like this. This, in principle, also allows to put several samples on the grid. So the total volume we need is around 5 nanoliters, and it takes around 10 minutes to prepare a grid. There are, of course, also problems. And I showed this slide because this morning there was a discussion about negative stain, that many particles seem to be nice, looking better in negative stain than when you do cryo. It does not fall apart. And what we observed, I assume most of you are using uranyl acetate for a negative staining. And uranyl acetate really has a cross-linking effect. So when you absorb first the protein particles on the EM grid, you don't see that because they first absorb, then you stain. But what we are doing is we are staying in solution for a certain time. And this leads to us really to the cross-linking of the protein. So it clusters. It's not just aggregation, it's really clustering. This was reported before. Other negative effects, of course, are if you dry too fast, you get this coffee ring. And this coffee ring, it leads to, during the drying process, it leads to some convections where protein is concentrated around. This you can suppress by slow drying, where you get homogeneous stain everywhere. So now we have miniaturized our EM grid preparation. We can do now, we can connect this now directly to protein isolation. Some proteins you only have in very small quantity in the cells. So our idea is we don't want to use 1 liter of cell culture. You can barely do this with HEK cells or something. We want to use 40,000 cells and isolate the proteins from this. So from minimal amounts. And we want to do it very fast. We want to do it not in one day, we want to do it from the cell lysate to the grid in 1 to 2 hours maximally. So what we developed some years ago is a method where we use antibodies to fish protein out. So we have an antibody. And this antibody, we are using photocleavable biotin crosslinkers. So here we have a biotin. We are using superparamagnetic particles. And we can cleave this crosslinker by illumination with UV light, also light around 360 nanometers. So we are using antibodies. In the meantime, we are working together with chemists, and we are testing new crosslinkers like NTA crosslinkers that we can fish out also histax protein, if someone wants that. So what we are doing is we have a magnetic trap with electromagnets. And this gives a field gradient, an electromagnetic field gradient, and a constant field which polarizes these superparamagnetic particles. and the antibody with the target protein can bind to this trap, to these beads, which are immobilized, and we can wash our target protein, and at the end, we release the target protein by illumination and cleaving of the photocleavable crosslinker. This looks, of course, all these steps are automized in the meantime, so we can mix cell lysate, superparamagnetic particles. We can immobilize them, we can wash them, and at the end, we can cleave them. So the original publication some years ago, we used permanent magnets. In the meantime, we use electromagnets, and one main reason we are using it, it allows mixing of our sample. Mixing is a problem in microfluidics. It also prevents clumping of the bead plug. These are some older results. So this is fishing of the 20S proteasome from 30,000 hex cells. It was below, It was less than 2 hours total experimental time. And this is endogenous protein, so we used specific antibodies. So we fished out the core protein, but we also fished out the protein with the regulatory one or two regulatory units out of it. So this basically works. It's just some other examples from collaborators. We fished out connecting structures from Plasmodium falciparum infected red blood cells here, which our collaborators were not able to purify before. So this is with photoelution, and this is without photoelution. You see here the superparamagnetic particles. Another example is that we fished tau tangles from P301S mouse models. Here we were using bigger particles just for temperature reason. We still have to implement a stronger cooling system, but here you can see these tau tangles, which were also fished out with specific antibodies. Another application of this fishing method is interaction labeling, as we called it. So if we have a primary antibody, we have a primary target, we want to detect if a binding partner to this primary target is bound to the protein, and this we can do in line by mixing. We immobilize the primary target and the binding partner in the magnetic trap. Then we can flush the secondary antibody with, which is bound to nanogold to it and elute it. And the results then looks like this. Is our emulated experiments with apoferritin. So you can see here the binding partner is labeled by this nanogold. So with this, I'm coming for the last 3 minutes to the last application or opportunity we have with miniaturized sample preparation. We call it visual proteomics, but it's not the tomography. And then looking at it, it's a different approach. So what we basically are doing is we have our cell cultures of adherent eukaryotic cells. We are coming with the nozzle. We have short electropulses in the millisecond, microsecond, millisecond range. And we lyse the cells, and at the simultaneously, we aspirate the cell contents. What we are, the second step, of course, you already have seen, we can then do sample conditioning, and we can write grid with the cell contents, with the cytosolic and membrane contents of the cell. What we are using is electroporation. So what we realized is just electroporation is not enough to disrupt a cell completely. We also need shear forces, so we have to aspirate quite fast. This disrupts the cell together. And we have here made some, here you see this finite element analysis of the electric field. We get very strong electric fields around 5,000 volt per centimeters. But one fear we had was that we heat up too much the sample so that the protein denaturates. If we use too high voltages with 5 micrometer gap, it really gets too high. But in a controlled level, let's say for 5 micrometer distance, with 10 volts, we are on the safe side, normally with 5 pulses. So this you can also see here. This is an experiment where we used actin filaments. This is the control experiment where we didn't apply any voltage. With 10 volts, we don't see any artifacts. Normally, we use 5 to 7 volts to lyse individual cells. With 20 volts, we really start to see some effects. And if you're using 40 volts, we have more or less a scrambled egg. So this is how it looks like when we lyse an individual eukaryotic cell. So you find all kind of structure. So you see actin filaments, you see ATPase heads, or at least we interpreted it as that. This is from an individual cell, but it also allows to do the same thing. This is negative stain. It also allows to do cryo EM. So we can place all the sample on the EM. We slowly evaporate, we make a thinning, and then we find these cell structures. But I think this here we still can optimize. Basically, we did not really understand why it works, because if we put 3 nanoliters of sample on a grid, it's quite a large volume. And then we do this thinning, and we could expect that it's just crowded with salt crystals, but it's not for some reasons. This is in PPS buffer. So the final goal, what we are working now on, is to write data analysis. So we are following a differential visual proteomics approach. So we write negative control cells and positive controls, like hedgehogged cells, on a grid. And we are currently writing softwares doing the analysis to find the differential pattern of the structures we have in our soup. Okay, it's a tea leaf reading program. So with this, I'm already at the end. So I'm speaking, try to give a short overview about different methods for to miniaturize sample preparation, EM grid preparation. I showed how we prepare cryo EM grids from between 3 and 20 nanoliters of total sample volume. I showed total sample volume preparation for negative stain, sample conditioning, protein isolation, interaction labeling, and at the end, I gave an outlook on a new way to do visual proteomics, we hope, in the future. And like this, I'm at the end with the acknowledgement. These are all the students, so this is this was the first generation of students working on the project in red. And this is the second generation of students working on the project. I showed a lot of data from Stefan Arnold, Luca Rima, Claudio Schmidli, and Simon Kemmerle. He started with the project. And I'd like to thank Henning Stahlberg also for the ongoing support for these projects. And the whole lab of the CCNA in Basel and the funding for our research. So thank you very much for the attention.
One question.
You're going to cover the full pipeline when you can do the stage of taking the grid and putting it into the microscope. And is there any hope for this to happen anytime soon?
It's not the focus of our research. Yeah. So you still need to walk then to the microscope. So what we hope is that we can miniaturize the grids and load several grids in one big master grid template.